Okay, we're ready to go on with our last talk for today. Screen resolution is correct, I hope. Our last speaker is Steve French, also from the Samba team and a member of IBM. He will talk about Linux SIFS and SMB2 kernel clients, the year in review.
Yeah, you'll see the sheep in a minute. Couple of interesting things. These days, I've been working on, my day job. I've been spending time on other file systems too. We've got people in IBM on our team working on NFS. We've got people working on an interesting file system called the 9P file system for virtualization, as well as people working on EXT4. It's kind of an exciting area to work in. Now, last year at this time, we had our Vindictive Armadillo that came out soon after Samba XP. On June 9th, it was called 2630. I think the armadillo name sounds a little bit better. Now we're sheep on meth. I couldn't find a sheep on meth, maybe if I went to Australia, but I thought that was pretty close. So I'll let you guys pass judgment on whether that accurately portrays what Linus had in mind when he called Linux that. You know, each kernel version gets a new nickname. Okay, so looking backwards a year, last year was a fairly typical year in one sense. Jeff Layton's here, of course, and others who've contributed kernel patches. 185 patches, that's comparable to what activity you see in NFS. But what's very interesting about this is, of course, that our server's in user space. And so the thousands of Samba server patches you don't see here, these are just ones relating to the client. And these are just ones relating to the kernel code itself, not to the user space tools. But, you know, we did something very interesting. We moved the kernel utilities slightly, and Jeff went wild. I think in 3 months he put 100 changes into the SIFS utils, including some very important ones. And of course, all in parallel to this, we've been working on SMB2 code. The SMB2 module is about a third smaller, but none of these changes here counted that SMB2 activity. So it's actually been a very productive year. Now, what are our goals here? We've talked about this before, but I want to emphasize this over and over and over again. Our goal is you don't want the user to know the difference between running on EXT4 or NTFS or FAT32 or NFS or SIFS. I mean, you'd like network mounts to be transparent. If the app has to detect the difference, sure, fine. But most applications, you don't want to open Office to sit there and have a separate bug fix to work around some SIFS limitation. So we need near-perfect semantics, and so that talk Tom Talby had earlier about POSIX extensions, Unix extensions, is very important in the long term for SMB2, just as we had for SIFS. It's also very important to remember that every month we come up with new minor issues. We just talked with Jeremy Allison today, now he's trying to hide, about whether or not we need, what a unique ID means. Do we need to keep, for POSIX, do we need a little bit more information returned or not on the Unix query? Now, SMB2 is interesting. It'll offer more scalability. Obviously, you have 64-bit file handles and a few other areas where you get past annoying SIFS limits, you get better performance guarantees. But there's a number of very interesting things related to data integrity, the kinds of things that bother one of the guys on my team, Sharish, every day. Some tester calls up and says, I've been running this test for 48 hours, copying 3 terabytes of data, every whatever, and we have one miscompare. And we look in the traces, we find network reconnections, we find problems due to recovery after reconnections. And the stricter data integrity guarantees that SMB2 offers are going to be helpful for that. So a couple quick things we should talk about. It's not just one developer. Jeff actually wrote a lot more patches than I did to SIFS last year. I think he did 80 and I did 60 or something like that. Sharish Pagranakar, the guy from Novell, Suresh, a number of other developers have done quite a bit of work. And on SMB2, I've listed some of the developers that have been working on it. Now, the SIFS kernel has been in for 7 years now, and the protocol itself has been around for 26 years. And I don't think any of us have been working on this for 26 years, maybe 19 or 20, but I think you're now down to 18 years? Yeah, not bad. And by the way, going back to this list here, I get very impressed about how quickly people pick things up. We added a guy to our team, Jeremy Bongio, and He had useful patches in after a month of work. It was quite remarkable. It continually surprises me, because some of this is very obscure. Okay, the current CIFS version is 1.64. A year ago, we were at CIFS version 1.58. You can view that in proc as a way of telling how up-to-date, you know, Jeff Layton backport stuff and Suresh backport stuff. There's a number of things that are going to be very helpful looking forward, though, and one of them is Chris. Where's Chris hiding? I hate to say this, but MS CIFS may turn out to be useful.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there are a lot of really strange corner cases. And we asked you one prompt you in your talk, you know, are unique IDs really unique?
I need to know what you call that, by the way.
Okay. I can show you traces. Jeff Layton can show you traces. But the point is that there are a lot of little things, and this drive to document is actually helpful. You know, the thing that hurts us the most, though, is we're too shy about poking Microsoft. I got 3 emails today from one of the guys I'm working with asking about, well, what's the session key look like when you have this flag on? And, you know, can this field really have something other than a domain name in it in NTLM SSP? It's fascinating how complicated, you know, 40 pages of text can be. We track bugs in Bugzilla. Jeff and Sharish do a pretty good job of trying to keep that number down. A lot of the bugs, there are some valid bugs still in Bugzilla, obviously. In the external Bugzilla, there are some real bugs, but the in particular one we were just talking about. But generally, they're mostly features and things that are fixed these days. There have been a lot of stability improvements. I was looking through the log of these hundreds of changes. We fixed 3 or 4 buffer over ones that were quite important. A memory leak in NTLM v2 authentication, various problems with symlinks and hard links, various loops. So DFS, we weren't checking if you sent a referral back to yourself and gotten an infinite loop in DFS, we were now checking for that. Error handling cases in DFS. We have a set of extensions for POSIX that were added to allow open to complete more quickly. So in the create call, we can actually do everything without having to go come back and do multiple set adder calls afterwards. The side effect of that, though, was that we added some complexity to the create code path, and there were a number of fixes for that. Now, doing this allows us to be 30 or 40% faster than before for open, but it does have the side effect that, you know, we had to fix these bugs here. And those were some visible things over the year that were addressed. Reconnect is now much more stable. Some of the testing work that guys doing GPFS, for example, are doing beating GPFS share, a share Samba server on top of a cluster file system have led to you know, much longer times sometimes where you could take minutes to complete a write operation. So the Linux client reconnecting, there were a number of problems with data integrity in that case that have been addressed. There are also some interesting granularity issues. Turns out, you know, EXT3 has a 1-second time granularity, and it's very tough for us to tell that. In Unix, in the kernel, you can go see what the time granularity is. It's something in the superblock. But over the wire, I can't go ask Samba, hey, you know, tell me what your time granularity is. So I can't tell when Samba is rounding time and it's going backwards, which is very confusing to apps like OpenOffice when suddenly, you know, they have a millisecond time, 1.003 seconds now suddenly becomes 1.1 second. Or 1.0 seconds, excuse me. So we now properly round timestamps down, which helps some apps like OpenOffice. We'll also fix some append issues. It turns out append was very little understood. I guess that's a polite way to put it. And the combination of how Windows does append and what the OAppend flag means in POSIX Open is now fixed. Let's see, Pavel has done some good work on byte range locks, and we fixed large writes to OS2. This is just a sample, and you know, here's a list. We could go on about some of the things that have been fixed. CIFS over SSH tunnels. Did you know people use CIFS for booting on diskless workstations in Linux? That was very cool. But, I mean, I thought it would be a good thing to do because, you know, in my previous life before working on Linux, we did, you know, Windows and OS2 network boot. It's very cool to boot diskless systems. But people were doing that with CIFS, and there was an issue that's been fixed in that. Also, we added an ability to set TCP no delay optionally as a SOC option. Socket option. If you want more socket options, we can add more easily now that we have the infrastructure there. Turns out in Samba, the SMB conf allows you to set quite a few socket options. Now, the server-generated inode numbers were great. We have a feature to use Windows Server inode numbers that makes links work properly. Turns out that if you hard link a file, it's very difficult when you're trying to generate inode numbers on the fly on the client to tell if it's the same file. So if we can trust the server to give us unique numbers, that's great. We're going to have to flip that back, unfortunately, temporarily on 2.6.34 because of an issue that Jeff was talking to Jeremy about. The side effect of that is it's a little harder to detect hard links. A little bit misleading when you're doing backup applications because their inode numbers look different. Okay, the big news, though, and I hope Jeff is very persuasive in his talk, wherever Jeff is, multi-user authentication. And I think this is one of the best news yet. NFS users are used to the idea of being able to mount to a server, and then when Jeremy's UID 23 accesses the mount, it uses the UID 23 credentials, and when Tridge's UID 24 accesses the mount, it uses UID 24's credentials. It's a little bit tricky in the case of Kerberos, where you have difficulties acquiring the credentials for every possible process on the system. But getting SIFS to work with that model is hard. We had a multi-user authentication option, but it required you to pre-mount, and it had some holes in it. Jeff's approach is much cleaner, and he's doing a talk on that. Okay, user space utilities. They're now a separate tree, the SIFS utils tree, and that was done to ease maintainability. I think that's been a huge success, at least based on the number of changes that have gone into it. It's much easier to build now, but I think the most important thing here is that we had some holes, and actually Linux in general had some holes when you're trying to mount as an unprivileged user. Mount follows symlinks, and that's very bad. And so to cover that hole, there's some various things you can do. But since the SIFS, you can be blocked asking for a password, the hole is pretty large, where you could be running as administrator with a tool that's root, basically. The changes that Jeff made to mount SIFS to work around this are much, much better. And now we can, of course, allow unprivileged users to mount more safely. Now, it turns out that we're going to have the same mount helper for mount SMB2, and the amount of code different is small. There's a lot of mount options that aren't needed anymore. SMB2 has very few new mount options that are needed, but it has a lot of old ones that don't matter anymore. We don't have to work around older buggy servers. So the actual differences in code when we detect that we're built as mount SMB2 instead of SIFS is very small. The help is different. There's a few we don't parse for, and the module that you have to load is different. Okay, what about SMB2? SMB2, of course, is sort of the network file system of the future. We heard Microsoft talk about that some today. I'm very impressed with it now that I've been coding it. A little over 2 years ago, about 2.5 years ago, we began a prototype, and then a year and a half ago, we threw it away and rewrote it. Last year, there was a Summer of Code guy that helped make some progress on this, and it worked reasonably well by the end of the summer. Then it was put on the shelf for a while, and in January, picked up again. Jeremy Banjo has been doing some good work on that. Pavel sent in a bunch of patches for that. In May 2009, a Git tree was created, and at the end of the summer, we had mount working fairly well. Back in the testing event back in 2009, we found problems with authentication that were sort of outside the scope of the main kernel code, but that had things to do with negotiate and session setup that weren't documented. Now they're fixed. Now we understand. Now work. At Connectathon, we tested. We found some Samba server bugs that Jeremy fixed. We got hard links working and rename working. The current size is about two-thirds the size of SIFS, partly because it's a smaller protocol. Most of the key operations are working. The work that's in progress at the moment, Jeremy Bongio is working async read pages. It's very exciting work. I got an email the day before yesterday from him, and he did some simple testing with SMB2 read pages. And these are files that are 80K and larger. Smaller files, actually SIFS is a little bit faster because there's fewer frames sent on the wire currently because we're not caching open data. That's fascinating. About 25% faster already. We're not doing async. We're not using the async flag in the send yet, and we're not using reads over 64K at the moment. With those, we're expected to get to double the performance of SIFS over fast networks. As it is, we're already 25% faster than SIFS for read. Over the summer, Pavel's going to be working write pages, async write pages. Last night I was putting in some of the op-lock code. Sharish has been looking at NTLM SSP. We also have some summer of code work that's going on caching NTLM credentials in kernel, and we're expecting that to help both SIFS and SMB2. Some of these features, the infrastructure for this can be backported to SIFS when it becomes stable as well, and obviously we can use some common libraries in the long term. There's probably about a third of the code that could be shared between SMB2 and SIFS in the long run. The current operations that are missing, that are probably most visible, setting of ACLs, so when you want to do a chmod and you want that to set an ACL, we have code to get and set ACLs in SIFS, but we don't have code like that in SMB2 yet. And then symlink code using the Windows-style symlinks. This was the performance results that Jeremy sent me a couple days ago. 11 seconds on SMB2 versus 13.2 seconds on, these are to a local VM. It should be a little bit larger difference in a traditional, you know, gigabit Ethernet network. But these are, you know, not taking advantage of the larger I/O sizes, which should help as well. And we're also not dispatching as many operations on the wire as we can because we're ignoring the credits at the moment, so we were just sending a relatively small number of operations at once. Okay, so what is SMB2? Obviously, it's the default file system protocol, but I think most importantly, it's going to be the most common protocol, so it's the one that developers on the server and client are going to focus a lot of their effort. So as it becomes the most common protocol, it's going to be critical for us on Linux to be able to support it extremely well, you know, better than NFS. There clearly already more SMB2 servers out there than NFS servers. If 75% of the servers are Windows, possibly more, 75% of the servers out there are Windows by units, then we already probably have a significant lead for SMB2 in the field, so we really have to support this well. But it also, to get data most efficiently, it has some features that we're going to have to take advantage of, and not just to play, you know, your 8 gigabyte DVD images for whatever movie you want to watch. But I think there's some important things to talk about, though. Is it good for Linux? And as the more I've been coding this, I'm actually fairly pleased with how well it matches to what things matter in Linux. The larger I/O sizes help. The way read pages is structured and write pages is structured in Linux, it sends you megabytes, 16, 32, or more megabytes of data that it wants at one time when it's doing large file sequential I/O. So it's already asking for this. We just couldn't service it with the previous protocol without breaking it into very small chunks. The caching improvements work well. The credits and the flow control work well. I think async operations are going to help the way we implement write pages a lot. But there are some other things as well. Some things I particularly like are the timestamps returned on close. Now I can cache a closed file. I can send a close on a file and cache it if I want, because I get the timestamp back, so I know whether the file's changed. I like this idea of credits, being able to do flow control. And a lot of the hard bugs have to do with reconnection, what to do after reconnection, how I reconnect all my file handles and locks after reconnection, how I avoid losing data after reconnection. And those are much better with the durability and persistent file IDs. So clearly it's faster than SIFS. Now, this is interesting for a number of reasons. One is the currents we were trying on those previous numbers to Samba. Now, Samba maps some of these operations on top of SIFS, and we're still going faster. So we have longer path lengths on the server, and yet we're still a little bit faster, which is kind of cool. So what are the goals? Besides making it faster, that's great, more scalable. Clearly, we can do certain things. Opening 64,000 files we can't do in SIFS. Just can't do it. There's no way to return 64,000 unique file IDs. But I'd also like to do some other things. I'd like to use the SIFS client, like we were doing Connectathon, to find bugs in the server and cooperatively working with the server developers, get this code more stable, both server and client. Get some of the performance optimized. Sometimes it's hard to change the Windows client to do something or change SMB client to do something. I'd also like to address a lot of the nagging problems that people like Christoph and Alviro have pointed out in SIFS code. A lot of the naming conventions and things like that are annoying. Removing some of the code that is back-level server compensations that make it hard to read really annoyed developers like Christoph and Al and some of the better-known kernel developers, because it just looks sloppy to have these special cases for lots of servers. Currently, the only servers we really have to worry about are a small number of Windows servers and Samba, so we can set the bar a lot higher. And we have the spec now. In the past, when there was something that a server developer did wrong, we didn't have MSSIFs to go out and say, look, you did it wrong. Now we have MSSMB too, and we can, you know, if a guy's really wrong, we can tell the customer, look, you know, EMC, NetApp, IBM, whoever it is that's got the server problem, look, it's wrong. So we don't always have to create a client compensation for going forward in the future, although we may have to in some cases. The higher data integrity guarantees I also very much like, because clearly NFS4 set the bar much higher. I'm also very pleased about the idea of setting, we couldn't, for example, mandate NTLM v2 for the SIFS client. Some servers don't support NTLM v2. We couldn't mandate 128-bit signing, but we could SMB2. I also want to use this as a testbed for these Unix extensions going forward. Okay, so what are the priorities? We want enough functions so we pass, you know, let's say, basic compatibility tests. Connectathon tests have to run. The connectathon tests are probably a month away from being able to run the basic tests perfectly, maybe less. Some of the connectathon stuff runs, but not all. You know, we can make a directory touch a file, that sort of thing. Remove directories already. And obviously we need the Samba server to pass tests, and anything we can do on the client side to make it easier for the server to pass functional tests would be great. We have to define these protocol extensions that Tom talked about in his talk earlier this afternoon. And we have to make sure that these extensions make sense for both the server developers and the client developers. In some sense, these extensions are driven by the client developers, macOS, Solaris, Linux, all of the Unix client guys. We have a VFS call that says, you know, get lease. Or we have a VFS call that we need for a particular purpose. We have to be able to send something on the wire to do that. But at the same time, it doesn't do us any good to send something on the wire if no server could ever implement it. And I'm pleased that the current extensions, you know, the server developers are also active. Microsoft's is active as well. And we also have this challenge on the server side because we may have to extend the VFS in other places. One of the guys on my team, Anish Kumar, has been working on, you know, NFS4 ACL work. He's been also working on a patch that got a lot of news coverage about the export operations being visible via syscall. So you could use persistent identifiers for NFS servers. NFS servers could ask for a user space application could ask to open a file by a file identifier rather than opening it by name, which NFS servers need, but also we may need in the future for Samba to do SMB2. Also, we need to make sure that in all places SMB2 is faster than SIFS. We don't want this case where SIFS is faster on some things than SMB2 and others. Because we have a Unix extension for SIFS, we can do open faster today. Open takes fewer calls on SIFS than it would in SMB2. Because in SIFS, we can send one call that does everything. Because we have Unix extensions, we need to do the same thing with SMB2 so the number of round trips is smaller. You know, and SMB2 also has a very nice compounding feature. So we can send open, operation, close. One thing I should also mention is that SMB2 is very different than SIFS in one way. Everything in SMB2 is handle-based, except open itself. I'd say half the calls I send today in SIFS are path-based, which creates problems with what do you do on the server side with op-locks. Now I can reuse handles for lots of different purposes, and I'm not having to, once we do handle catching properly, I think you'll see actually less traffic than you'd think, and it's also a little bit easier to think about when everything is handle-based. So notice the purpose of Unix extensions. We need the exact same file semantics as a local file system has. And these compensations can't harm data integrity, limited impact on performance, but we do want to use the existing file system features of SMB2 on the wire unless there's a really strong argument to extend it. So compensations are okay as long as they don't harm data integrity or performance too much. But where compensations aren't possible, the extensions have to be required. And Tom's talk went through that list pretty well. So there's now the website set up that he described in his talk. And I won't talk much more about that because his talk contained enough information as a starting point for us to continue the work with Solaris guys and Apple guys and Linux client guys with the server developers on this. You know, there's a number of areas to discuss about, you know, name remapping filters. And this issue at the bottom, I talk about unique IDs. These are things we have to do. So how do you want to do it? We got to find a way to do it. So one of the things, unique IDs, do we want to return a device ID as well as unique ID? How big does a NTFS identifier have to be? But we have to be able to reconnect and guarantee that an inode that we think is inode 1 really is inode 1, because we have that hashed into as inode 1. So that bottom one is related to this discussion we had earlier. Okay. We also have an interesting question. What behaviors are preferred? Where the client's behavior is flexible, we can choose POSIX ACLs, we could choose NFS-style ACLs, SIF-style ACLs. How do we query the server to see what its file system prefers? We had an interesting concept in the Linux SIFS extensions about a query Unix FS attributes. We could ask the file system, we could ask the server, for this particular export, what behaviors does your file system support? And for example, transport encryption was one of those things you could return, as were things like whether you supported POSIX ACLs. And some equivalent of that's needed. Okay, so where to go from here? There was a website mentioned for the Unix extensions in Tom's talk. We have the two mailing lists. We have various Git trees. We have the wire layout visible in these files, smb2pdu.h. If you want to look at the SIFS one, sifspdu.h. Or Chris's MS SIFS. Sometimes I find the terseness of a header file easier to understand. Obviously, Samba has headers for some of this as well. So we need to also find out what features users want most. We found some interesting things. For example, proxy caching over SIFS. Guy came up afterwards at one of these talks and mentioned how important that was to him and was talking about an extension, so we added a flag, a reserved command code for that. Another example, at one of the earlier conferences I went to, I got a new perspective on where SIFS is used from a guy who was using SIFS for a remote backup application. Wouldn't have thought about that. It made sense when he went through why he uses it that way and why his application uses it that way. I guess a year and a half ago, we had, and actually even at Connectathon, we had these great discussions with guys who were using the Linux SIFS client for Shrek 3 and various unnamed films I don't think I can mention in public. But, those kind of films that they show in Germany on those stations at night. But anyway, I was fascinated why he was using the Linux SIFS client for that. And he explained the reasons, and it was actually very sensible. He uses the Mac clients for some things, the Windows client for some things, but the Linux SIFS client for certain stages of the editing process for many of their movies, like Shrek 3, was very useful. It's good for us to get that kind of feedback at conferences like this. Okay, there's one thing I wanted to do now that we've got a, we've got a SMB2 mount here, right? So let's see if we can make directory. By the way, this is absolutely current code. So if we find bugs here, this is great. It'll keep the Linux kernel from releasing next week. We can, actually, the Linux kernel doesn't contain my SMB2 code, so it might. But it is possible that we'll find bugs here in the kernel. This is a test kernel. So let's see, we have Jeremy Allison there, so let's make directory Jeremy Allison. Okay, that worked. And is Jim McDonough around here? Let's see, where's Jim? So we'll make a directory, we'll make a file, Jim. Okay. There's our files. It worked, that's great. So anyway, because we had a bug in Jim. No, actually, if you're curious, the reason what happens is Shirish had an overflow with processing the end of a the reader response, and Shirish hasn't sent me a patch for that. I thought this was a small enough directory listing that we wouldn't hit it, because it didn't hit it earlier. But I was actually tempted to run the presentation off a PDF file, because I can do that if we reboot here. But I have a copy of the presentation out there, and I was actually going through the presentation in events, the Acrobat presentation, over an SMB2 mount while we were preparing this. I wasn't brave enough to run OpenOffice on it yet, because OpenOffice does some really evil things with locking and such. And anyway, so the basic operations work. Reader has an overflow. At the moment, very, very large reads, read pages, we've turned off. So we're using single page read because there is a problem. There's a leak that we're debugging today, and actually back in Austin. Anyway, so it's very exciting. The code is much faster than I expected at this stage. It is much more complicated than you might think to do some of this because, you know, this is a different world. This is all handle-based means that you have every single operation is doing three things right now until we get handle caching turned on. Anyway, so let's talk about some questions. Any questions about the SMB2 implementation? By the way, the source code is public. It's out on kernel.org. And we're planning on trying to merge it around 2.6.36.
Steve, yes. What server were you using in your test? That was your client too?
Yeah, this was actually a good question. I'm running Samba 3.6 pre from about a month ago. I know. And this is the other thing that gets me a little bit worried. We talked about this, you know, reader just hung here. The first thing I tried was a reader on an invalid share. The mount worked. So I'm thinking that's a bug that Jeremy fixed. I looked at the log, and there was about 60 bugs, 60 change sets that you put in the last 4 weeks. So I have that, but I'm not running it on this one.
I guess the other thing I'm curious is, have you tried your client with other servers?
Oh, yeah, I've actually tried it. Matter of fact...
Does it behave differently?
So this thing here is Windows 7 on the other partition. I did not install a VMware image or equivalent on it, so I couldn't run VMware to show you Windows 7. But in fact, my normal environment at home, this guy is actually running Windows 7. Another system's running Windows Vista, and I'm developing on a different system with Linux. So actually, I'm trying it to Windows more than I am to Samba at the moment. It works a little bit better to Windows at the moment because, cool. Well, I'm not running Jeremy's latest build. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying there's been at least two change sets gone in your talk, so on the SMB2 code. Do you think it might be an idea to, when you're talking to a server, to start by negotiating SMB2 and then falling back to SMB1, or are you going to make it a separate and explicit mount command? I'm just wondering, because a lot of the time, I mean, users don't want to have to care whether the server's running SMB2 or 1. Right. They just want it to connect.
Absolutely agree. So my preference would be that the user could force, if they chose, by default it should fall back. Now, we had some interesting examples in the SIFS code. So we do a mount syscall, and if that failed, we would retry for various reasons. Some of the reasons we might retry is because some servers were case sensitive on how you typed in the share name. So we obviously just retry the syscall and do that in user space rather than make the kernel try to figure out if it had to be retried or not. And I'm thinking that may work since the mount helper will have the SMB2 and syscalls, two very small functions with, you know, fairly common code. We can retry, you know, mod probe the SIFS code in, mount to SIFS if that fails. Clearly, you want the more functional one as the default. At the moment, though, until this is not experimental anymore, we want the user to get what he wants. Right? I mean, if you want an experimental SMB2, tell me. If you want SIFS, you should get SIFS. Because, you know, this code is obviously, we just hung it, right? It's not perfectly stable yet. But at the point where it starts going into a distro, I think the common sense thing is that we in-mount SMB2. If the SMB2 mount fails, we can retry a SIFS mount. The problem is that we do have to be able to turn that off. Because, for example, there are data integrity differences in SMB2 that you might not want to mount. Maybe you want to mount NFS if SMB2 isn't available. But I think that by default, we should retry, as Microsoft does, from SMB2 to fall back to SIFS. And that's fairly easy to do.
Steve, I mean, there's a negotiate function in SMB2 that can fall down. So you would actually attempt the mount, fail the mount, drop the connection, and reconnect, and then negotiate.
I agree, and I've so far intentionally directly gone to it with the, because right now I'm trying only SMB2. I've gone directly with the SMB2 to negotiate rather than do an SMB1 negotiate and see if it supports both. That's easy enough to do. That's a small change.
It'd be a lot more efficient. It'd be a lot more efficient to not drop the connection and probably more resource friendly as well.
Yeah. But at the same time, do I really want, I mean, how many servers out there? Yeah, there may be enough to make it worthwhile to not drop the connection.
You won't be able to do that with the current architecture because it's two file systems. So you have SIFS and SMB, and the VFS says, hey, give me a SIFS file system, or it gives me an SMB file system. So we're kind of locked into dropping the connection with the way the current design.
That's kind of where I'm going, because the NFS folks have the same issue.
Right.
But you can't actually down-negotiate from V4 to V3.
Right.
You have to start over with a new V3 attempt. But they also have the two file system, the two client file systems.
Yeah, and I think, you know, history has shown that was kind of a mistake.
Well, yeah. It's regretted today, and so I'm trying to keep this out of it.
Perhaps. So that was part of my argument for not doing it this way, but that's where we are. So.
Right. Well, okay. I mean, it's an interesting question, and I'm not sure that there are trade-offs in both. So this question about whether it's better to have it one or the other, the NFS case, you have one module, but they've chosen to separate the protocol negotiation. It's interesting. EXT 3 and 4 separated, Riser 3 and 4 separated. Just as an aside, my life is easier because I can afford to make pretty aggressive changes. I think where it's harder is, like you say, sharing the connection is going to be hard. I don't think it's going to be a problem sharing the credential cache, but these are the areas where some of the common libraries haven't been written yet because, you know, we've got some work to do. I do want to make it easy to do experimental things in the SMB2 code, at least for the next 6 months or year, because, you know, we have to be able to break without risking. People run real things that make, you know, the mission critical apps on SIFS today, and we don't want to do that. We don't want to we don't want to break that with SMB2. Mount itself can do this transparently, so that already is a wrapper. But the modules are different, so you're going to end up tearing down a connection and reconnecting when mount fails. So, but there's no easy wrapper for both that you could do, for a couple reasons. Even the simplest thing, the header itself, is dramatically different. And the flow control in the SMB2 header doesn't have an equivalent in SIFS. So it's hard to, you know, the send code is going to differ in some areas. The signing code is going to differ in a few places.
Any more questions?
By the way, one area where there is common code right now is the upcall. All the Kerberos, all that stuff is going to be identical. Okay, anyway, thank you guys very much for your time and attention.
And thank you.